Ghost Knight Media Studios and Paranormal Underground Magazine, welcome to Paranormal Underground Radio. It's time to explore the unexplained with your hosts, Rick Hale and Karen Frazier.
Hey everybody, it's another Thursday night and you know exactly where you are. You are at ztalkradio.com and you are listening to Paranormal Underground Radio. We are your hosts, Karen Frazier and Rick Hale. And Karen coming at you from Washington State, me coming from you to the great city of Chicago, Illinois. And we're here to talk some paranormal stuff. How you doing, Karen?
I'm doing pretty well, thank you. Sorry I had to bail on you last week at the last minute.
Oh, that's all right. That's all right.
I forgot that I was a 45-year-old woman and with a weak back and tried to lift up a planter, and that was all she wrote. So there you go.
That sucks, man. I don't know what else more to say. You know,
you should hear. I made some seriously. Yeah, and you know, the sad thing is the magic mom jeans were not able to protect me.
I was gonna ask about the mom jeans, though. So the mom jeans just weren't cutting it, eh?
No, I'm going to have to get some more powerful mom jeans. Perhaps those, what, the pajama jeans. I'm thinking if I get the pajama jeans that those might help.
You know what? It's at this point where you just say, you know what? Forget about it. I'm going with sweatpants.
It's at this point that I say, you know what? Forget about it. Tanner, come lift this planter for me. So, which is ultimately what happened anyway. But, you know, by then I made some of the best old person noises you've ever heard. Oh, my God. I would roll over in bed and go, aah! It was great.
You know, it's like I'm 37 years old. Oh, I'm sorry, Karen.
I just was saying it's humbling. Go on. You're 37.
I was going to say I'm 37 years old. I'm probably in the best shape that I've ever been in since maybe I was 17 or 18. And it's like I find myself making those old people grunts when I bend over. The first time I made it, I made one. I stood up and I'm like, where the hell did that come from? I'm turning into my dad.
It is inevitable. Pretty soon you're going to have people pulling your finger and it's just and offering people a butterscotch. Would you like a nice butterscotch?
So
wait for it. It's coming.
I can imagine. So I was telling you guys off the air that holy crap, I was sweating bullets, man, because here in Northern Illinois, we got hit really, really hard with this major microburst. It technically wasn't a tornado. It was a microburst. It just sort of like came in, knocked every like about 800,000 people out of service with electricity. And the missus and I, we just got ours back on, but we've been staying with her parents the last couple days. And you know what? I got to be honest with you. I have a very, very major case of infomania. I cannot go a day without checking my email at least 50 times. And it's like,
even when you're on vacation.
Even when I'm on vacation, it's like I feel away from it. It's like, it's not like I'm a big shot or anything. I just love checking my email.
See, and I get really excited if I go for like several hours with no email. It's like, yeah, nobody likes me.
So, yeah.
I actually went 2 days without this last week while I was flat on my back. I was flat on my back from like Sunday through Friday, although Thursday and Friday I had to like stop taking drugs and work my way into the courtroom because I had some court cases I had to do this week. And then sit in those wooden pews in court for hours. But anyway, where was I going with that? I forgot.
I wish I
knew. Because I'm old. So, hey, you know what I'm doing this weekend?
What's that?
I'm going to ghost camp.
Oh, you're going to...
With Ellen?
Right.
Yeah.
That's going to be pretty awesome. Are you taking the kids and Techie McScience Geek to that?
I am not. Well, kind of. One of the gal, one of Tanner's friends, and actually one of my friend's daughters, is 17, and she is going with me. She likes to do these paranormal things. She's like my paranormal apprentice or something, I guess. Mm-hmm. So she's going with me not to do the camp, but because she wants to see the location. It's at that museum that I wrote about for Paranormal Underground. I don't know, maybe back in January or something. Mm-hmm. So, I'm going to ghost camp this weekend. I'm going to take my little ghost box and any other gadgetry I can find, and I'm going to show those little kids a thing or two about, you know, how not to hunt for ghosts, probably. I'll be the example of don't do what she does. So,
I don't know. I mean, what I started my career at 8 years old. as a paranormal investigator. But, you know, with everything that you see on TV and all that, I'm starting to kind of like get under the impression that it's not exactly really safe for children to investigate the paranormal. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I'm glad you asked. Okay. I think it's safe. I'm different than you, though. Remember that you and I have rather different constructs when it comes to what's out there and what's evil. And I don't believe in demons.
Neither do I.
Right. But I believe that maybe sometimes there are some kind of cranky, curmudgeonly ghosts you come across. But, you know, kids are going to encounter cranky, curmudgeonly people in their lives as well.
Exactly.
I think that in a carefully controlled situation where the adults are there and they are making sure that the kids do everything the right way, I don't see any problem with it.
Okay. All right. Yeah, because it's sort of like one of those things right now, you know, that with you know, the paranormal being as popular as it is. I mean, back when I first started out, you know, I think there was maybe a dozen, maybe two dozen groups out there, and you had to really, you know, search them down. Nowadays, we have thousands of them, and
yes.
I mean, not that there's anything wrong with that, which there isn't. Because, you know, curiosity has been what fuels anything supernatural for, you know, millennia now. But, I definitely think that if you have, you know, somebody, I don't want to use the term the expert because there really aren't any experts in this. You could be experts in a certain part of the field, but not in the field as a whole, unless you're dead. So,
yeah.
But I mean, yeah, if you have somebody there that's knowledgeable and, you know, that can answer your questions and has a little bit of discernment, then, I suppose so. But if you don't, I don't think kids should be out there.
So, Cheryl, I'm curious as to what Cheryl thinks. Cheryl, what do you think?
Hi.
Hello.
Okay, I have to admit, I was just saying goodbye to Chad, who was leaving for work. What do I think about
she
what?
She wasn't listening to our fabulous
show. I heard demons.
What
I heard
kind
demons.
Of producer are you?
And I heard ghost
Rick
camp.
That I am off to ghost camp on this weekend with Ellen.
Yes,
who was on the show. And Rick sort of said, "Well, you know, what do you think about kids in the paranormal?" And I said, "I don't think there's anything wrong with it." So I was curious as to what you think.
I think that it definitely depends on your child and what if they feel and if you feel that they are capable of handling the different things that could happen. So I think it's a very individual decision, and I think that it can be okay, definitely.
Yeah. So okay. So that's my big weekend plan is going to ghost camp.
Woo.
Gonna take my peanut butter and jelly sandwich and, you know.
Good times. You know what? Before we get too far into the show, I just wanted to ask in my group, McHenry County Paranormal Research Group, our founder, fearless leader Tony Olszewski, recently had a heart valve replacement, the main one, and you know, he's kind of down right now, which is, you know, why I've been, you know, put in the lead investigation position. I don't know if, you know, our listeners pray, chant, you know, sing to the great flying spaghetti monster, whatever. You know, just say a little something for Tony because, you know, he's good thoughts. He's a great guy, and I really, you know, I really respect him, and I love him. I think he's a great man. So,
okay. Good thoughts for Tony.
Good thoughts for Tony Olszewski.
So, we can do that. So, hey, before we go on to talking about who our guest is, I have to tell you, I am doing an interview with our good friend Jason Haxton, owner of the Dybbuk Box, this month for the Love to Know Paranormal.
Okay.
And so I was just sort of cruising around the internet looking at some stuff, and I did my little Dybbuk Box search, and the Dybbuk Box movie is coming out on February 2nd, I think it is.
That's awesome.
They actually finally got that movie made.
Great.
Yeah, and I noticed one of the writers is actually Kevin Manis, who is the original owner of the Dybbuk Box.
Okay.
Or not the original owner, but the one who sold it to Jason. He's one of the writers of the movie. So,
right.
And then Jason has a book coming out, I think, too. Cheryl, do you know when Jason's book is coming out?
Were
you not listening?
I will. Yes. It's coming out here soon, and honestly, I wish I could remember the date, but I can't. But it's upcoming here, I think maybe early fall. Don't quote
me on
that.
So are we having him come back on?
Yeah, we certainly can invite him back on once it comes out.
I'd like to get Rick's eyes burning again.
Yeah.
Oh my God. You know what? For For anybody who's listening, but you know that what doesn't understand Karen's references. When we had these guys on before, we were talking about the Dybbuk box. I kind of sort of mocked the box, not on purpose, but intentionally, because, well, I have a tendency to be somewhat of a smartass, yeah. But I'm not kidding you, and I'm not going to lie to everybody here, and I'm not going to mess around, but my eyes started to itch and burn. And then as soon as the show was over, it all went away. Whether or not it's something psychosomatic or, my inner superstition, I don't know, but whatever it was definitely real, and it hurt like hell.
Okay, I have to interrupt here, because Rick, that happened to me. I'm sorry to interrupt. Rick, that happened to me the first time I talked to him on the podcast. Mm-hmm. When we had Jason on the podcast, right?
And JD mocked the box, and he had a tornado headed towards him. He had to leave in the middle of the podcast.
But my eyes were like kind of itchy and a little burning, and I thought, oh my God, is this like my imagination, or is this something real?
Yeah, because JD mocked the box and he had to leave in the middle for the tornado. And then he got bit by that tick and had Rocky Mountain spotted fever.
Yeah. Oh, did that happen before or after?
That happened after. God.
Yeah. So don't mock the box.
Don't mock the box, folks. That's why the Dybbuk box and I have mutual respect for one another, you see. And so the Dybbuk, I never mind. I'm not going to say anything.
Don't say it.
Since I'm doing an interview this month, I'll just... Nothing.
And I will be nice to the box as well. Okay.
Okay. So, all right.
Tonight we have a really good show. Actually, I'm kind of a fan of this guy. His name is Stephen David Lancaster. He's a published author as well as the creator of MonsterVisionTV.com, which is kind of like an online television show, and it's great. That's all I can really say. I really like watching it. I wanted to watch a little bit more this week, so I had a little bit more to go over. But, you know, like I said, we just got power back yesterday or whatever. If you guys haven't been, if y'all haven't been to it yet, you need to go, because it's a great show. And I really can't wait to talk to this guy. MonsterVisionTV.com.
Yeah, and not only that, but his three names, Stephen David Lancaster, it's like he's met every guy I ever dated and just amalgamated their names all into one.
Wait a minute, you dated a guy named Lancaster?
Last name, mm-hmm.
Oh, okay, I was going to say, wow, that's
And I dated a Stephen, and I've dated several Davids, so like I say, he's just put them all together, and there you go. It's like he's like my ex-boyfriends all in one package.
Outstanding. I'm sure he's going to want to know that as well.
That's why I'm telling you before he comes on, so it's off my chest.
Okay.
Yes.
So I guess we can just throw it over to Cheryl right now, and when we come back, we're going to be talking to Stephen David Lancaster. We're going to be talking Monster Vision. We're going to be talking psychical investigation and research, and we're going to be talking his books. So if everybody wants to stick around, we should have a good time. See you in a bit.
If you are a small business owner, you are paying too much for products and services. Do not spend your hard-earned cash on items you can get on trade. UTXTrade.com was formed specifically so you can trade your products or services with other companies on the network for items like advertising, computer repair, office furniture, printing, hotel stays, and much more. For more information, please visit UTXTrade.com. That's UTXTrade.com, a proud sponsor of Paranormal League of America.
Hi, everybody. This is Lee Douglas. I want to invite all of you 50s and 60s music lovers to listen to Old Time Rock and Roll, the largest oldies podcast in the world today, with a 110,000 song playlist. Our shows are always available 24/7. Go to www.oldtimernr.com. We have two new shows each week, and we take requests and dedication just like the old days. That's oldtimernr.com. Come on over. Enjoy the fun.
Hi, everyone. It's Karen Frazier at Paranormal Underground.
And I'm Rick Hale, Paranormal Underground writer.
We're here to invite you to explore the unexplained with Paranormal Underground Radio, live and on the air.
Join us every Thursday night for paranormal talk and great guests from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern Time on ztalkradio.com.
Hi, I'm Chad Wilson, publisher and co-founder of Paranormal Underground Magazine.
And I'm Cheryl Knight, editor-in-chief and co-founder of Paranormal Underground Magazine.
Every month, Paranormal Underground explores the unexplained with a free monthly online magazine.
We take an in-depth look at all kinds of unexplained phenomena, talk with some of the field's top experts, and share the latest news and information about the paranormal.
Visit us at ParanormalUnderground.net, where you can read the magazine online, explore our paranormal evidence galleries, watch videos, participate in discussions, or read blogs with some of our writers and editors.
We hope you'll join us. Visit ParanormalUnderground.net and explore the unexplained.
Do you want to keep up with what's going on at Paranormal Underground?
Then tweet us on Twitter at ParanormalUG.
Or follow us on Facebook at Paranormal Underground.
Meet us on MySpace, Paranormal Underground.
There's no need to be in the dark about what's going on at Paranormal Underground. Join us on your favorite social networking site today.
Station identification.
You're listening to ZTalk Radio Network.
Operating frequency
on ztalkradio.com. The views expressed and opinions given by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of ZTalk Radio, its affiliates, or sponsors.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Paranormal Underground Radio at ztalkradio.com. We are your hosts, Karen and Rick. Tonight joining us is going to be Stephen David Lancaster II. If you're not familiar with this guy, he is a filmmaker, an author, radio host, lecturer, paranormal researcher, and producer. He's done it all. In 2007, Lancaster began producing an independent paranormal investigation program entitled Monster Vision TV. Currently, it's in its sixth season. The show has achieved monumental status for an independent program with nearly 2 million views worldwide, myself included. The show has been featured on NBC, CBS, and countless publications. Furthermore, in 2010, Lancaster published his first book entitled Paranormal Investigator, True Accounts of the Paranormal. Stephen has also occasionally writes for the Coastal Journal, Examiner.com, and Ghost Voices magazine, which is another one that I like. In 2011, due to popular demand, he began hosting a paranormal radio show entitled Shadow Walker Radio for live celebrity streams at liveparanormal.com. Currently, Stephen is filming an extreme horror documentary entitled Monstrosity, which sounds awesome because it's totally extreme, so I'm going to like pound a do before I watch it. It has a 2012 release date. He is also writing his second entry into the Paranormal Investigation series. And you know, to find out more, just go to monstervisiontv.com or stephenlancaster.com. Stephen David Lancaster II, welcome to the Underground.
Thanks for having me, man. That was quite the introduction.
I know. It almost sounds like he prepared for that, doesn't it?
It really, I was convinced, though. I mean, I was convinced.
Well, I've never heard Rick prepare for anything, so kudos, Rick.
Thank you. Nice job.
Very nice introduction.
Thank you. I'm reading it right now, but it's like, you know, I only have like a second grade education, so it was kind of hard.
It was totally pretty good. I feel like a total amateur, and like I should perhaps bow in your presence. I am truly not worthy.
No, you are absolutely worthy. You're absolutely worthy. So, Stephen.
Yes.
You have some explaining to do with the name of your thing, Monster Vision. I mean, dude, there's not even so much
explaining to do.
There's not even so much as a Mongolian death worm going on at MonsterVisionTV.com. How did you, come about, Monster Vision for, which is a show basically about psychical research and investigation?
Oh, well, it's kind of funny. I've been conducting paranormal research since 1997.
Mm-hmm.
That was the very first time I actually went out into the field. And it wasn't until late 2006, maybe 2000. Yeah, it was late 2006.
Mm-hmm.
I started getting these cases. I had solely worked alone. I had never thought of having a team. Basically, for the research, I thought if it's just me in this building, there's no way. There could be influence from anybody else. You know, if I get a voice on a recorder, there's nobody else in the building but me, that kind of stuff. But I started getting these cases that were on a much, much larger scale. And I wanted to take these cases, but I couldn't handle them on my own in the amount of time I was given, per se. So I decided to pull in a friend of mine who was actually more into cryptozoology at the time. And we did this big case. We actually spent 8 nights in this place. And long story short, the footage from that particular investigation ended up on NBC in 2009. But that's kind of jumping ahead. But him and I got talking, and we were actually on the scene. We were on the investigation, and I said, there's Ghost Hunters and, all these other shows and all this stuff. I said, wouldn't it be nice to actually show people what it's really like? Not what you see so much on TV, but offer an independent version of paranormal reality. And we kind of decided to do it, and initially I just wanted to film the thing. I just wanted to be the investigator that was kind of a voice behind the camera. Uh-huh. And we filmed those 8 nights in this location, and I said, well, I'll try to put this together into something that's entertaining, and we'll see what happens. And, I had... Prior to that, I'd never had any experience putting any kind of film together as far as, for entertainment purposes. And I put this thing together, we threw it up on the internet, and within a year we had over 10,000 registered fans on YouTube. And I was like, wow, people are seeing something in this, and just developed
Stephen,
it from there.
Stephen, if I could just interrupt you for a second, I apologize.
We're having major Skype issues. I think Rick keeps getting booted off of Skype. I think he might have just mid, I apologize. He was about to apologize and boom, he's gone.
I deal with Skype myself. And I can't keep a solid call on that thing.
Yeah, do you use Skype on your show?
No, that's the whole reason I don't.
Yeah, well, if we could find a way to do it better, by golly, we would. So, Cheryl, I think we've lost Rick again. In the meantime, Stephen, go ahead and go on with what you were saying.
Well, I was just getting to the point that it kind of happened by accident, but didn't. You know, we just kind of decided, you know, well, now I have this buddy of mine that's willing to do these investigations with me. That's kind of a team. And we were just spitballing one day, and we were trying to, well, what are we going to call this team? And it just kind of came out. I said, how about the Pit Crew, Paranormal Investigation Team? And it was perfect, you know, the Pit Crew. And that stuck. And then we were like, well, what are we going to call the show? What are we going to call this show? We're going to document what we do. But the difference was we were only going to create episodes based on the investigations that actually produced something. Mm-hmm. If there was nothing paranormal, we weren't going to waste your time. That was kind of our niche. You know, we weren't going to show you just crap. We were going to, if it took us 6 months to come across an investigation that actually produced something, then that's how long it would be before another episode. So that was kind of our first niche. And then the second niche was, well, you know what? We're going to film this guerrilla style, and we're going to film it so the person watching it really kind of, they feel like they're in the investigation, not that they're focusing on a specific character or a specific actor, but they're actually seeing the investigation through our eyes. And that kind of became the niche, and we started tossing around ideas for names. I mean, stuff as lame as the Boo Boys, you know, I think Fear Factory was one of them. And I was like, wait a minute, that's a band, you know, and then finally Monster Vision TV just came out, and we did realize that, yeah, there was a show in the late 80s, early 90s called Monster Vision TV, but it was more of a horror program. You know, they showed different horror movies every week. So we're like, well, we won't get in any trouble with that. So we just went with Monster Vision TV because originally the concept was we were going to cover everything. We were going to cover ghosts, cryptozoological cases, extraterrestrial cases. It was going to be the gamut. And but it didn't happen that way. Once the show took off and then the Pit Crew got this reputation, it's just all the cases that kept coming in, you know, were ghosts, you know, so that we had to deal with that. So that's kind of
what a bummer. They're all ghosts, huh? So I'm not going to lie. I have actually not ever seen your show. Rick is the guy who has seen the show. So I apologize for that. But tell me, so I'm going to ask questions that are really stupid probably. So I apologize for that.
Hold on,
are you back, Rick?
Yeah, Karen, Stephen, I am really sorry about this. I'm having some kind of issue with Skype, and it's
because we talked about the Dybbuk box.
Hey,
Rick,
what it is.
I think your Skype is having issues. Do you want me to call you on your cell phone?
No,
because our Skype is working fine. I think maybe it's a connection issue on your end.
Okay, if it happens again, then just call me on the cell.
Call you on the cell. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, hopefully, that'll be it.
Okay. It says Rick mocked the box. Okay, moving on. Sorry, go ahead. So anyway, Rick, you ask him questions about the show, and I'll pop in with the you know, all the pertinent. Yeah.
Well, Stephen, before I was so rudely interrupted by the evil internet, you know, I just wanted you said that you entered into the field in about 1997. What was it that, you know, sparked this interest that, you know, many of us have in the supernatural?
Well, you know, it's a broken record story for me, but it's no different than most people. Back in 1987, when I was 10 years old, I had an experience. I woke up in the middle of the night, and there was this unseen force literally pulling on my arms. It was trying to pull me towards the bottom of the bed.
Okay.
And, you know, I won't get into it too much. My first book, that's actually how it opens up. It opens up with this experience. The chapter's called Birth of a Paranormal Investigator, go figure. But, you know, I was being attacked by something I couldn't see. It had taken every ounce of energy from me. I couldn't scream. I couldn't do anything. And then, you know, finally after it died down, I pulled away from it, and I was able to scream. And, you know, my parents ran in the room, and they dismissed it as a nightmare, of course. And but I was convinced. Nobody can convince me otherwise. I knew something had happened there that just wasn't right. And, you know, I was 10 years old, so It's not like, well, hey, I'll be a ghost hunter. It wasn't anything like that. It was just for the next 10 years, I was just so captivated by that. I wanted to know more. Mm-hmm. I wanted to know why. I wanted to know how. Just all those little details. So I just, every book I could find, from UFOs to parapsychology to cryptozoology, I mean, anything that was just out there, I was reading it. And, see, you know, I grew up in a very strict Christian home, a military home. And
then this sounds familiar.
This
kind of material was not allowed in the house, so I kind of had to sneak it in. You know, I had to sneak away at friends' house, you know, to research this stuff. And after about 10 years of really educating myself on all this phenomena is when I felt I was comfortable enough to actually go out in the field, start taking on other people's cases, really, ultimately, just for myself, because I was just trying to find the answers to my own questions. But, you know, things evolved from that point. But that's how it started.
So it's interesting to me because my experience was a little later, but of course it's what sparked the interest too. I was in my early 20s. It was my very first apartment. And I spent almost 20 years in denial, although drawn to and very fascinated by the paranormal, before I started to do something about it and started to research it. But what's funny is that I get to places where I say this all the time on the show, so Rick, sorry, you're going to hear me say it again. I believe in the moment, and as soon as I get away from the moment, I go back to doubting. So what can you tell me, Stephen, that will make me either believe or disbelieve once and for all? Anything?
That I'm not out to do that.
Yeah.
I'm really not. You know,
good answer.
I say to people all the time, I'm not out to make you believe. I'm out to help you understand. That's all I can say. I'm not out to prove anything to anybody but myself. I mean,
yeah.
Well, I think that's a very honest answer. And I mean, it's because everybody's, you know, who has an experience, you know, with something, the paranormal, it's like, you can reframe it all you want. Mm-hmm. You can try and explain it away. You can try and say that, well, with you, Stephen, it was like, well, I got, you know, a couple of super strong squirrels in my room and they're trying to pull my arms off in the middle of the night. Obviously that's, you know, not the case. So it's, you know, everybody has their own experience and kind of what brings us all into this field. Mine was at 8, so I'm going on almost 30 years of being in this field. But, yeah, it's definitely that one intense moment that sparks us. And, you know, obviously that's what it's done to you. And, you know, with your website and your books, you put out a lot of great content.
Thank you.
So, but, you know, with your show, there was one thing that I wanted to ask you about. I saw one of the videos where it was a ghost attacks somebody in a darkened room. Mm-hmm. Now, was that you in the video?
If it's the one I'm thinking of, most likely. There's a few of those out. There's one from a house in Long, South Carolina, where you actually see it in the video. Full of thread flies off of the dresser and hits me in the eye. Is that the one you're talking about?
But you're in a darkened room, and there was one part where it was the trash can looks like it was sliding across the room.
Yeah.
You know, I've never been a really big believer in the whole lights out thing, only because, you know, I want to see something flying at my face, because God knows I've had plenty of things thrown at me by human and otherwise. But, you know, it's like when, say that I'm a skeptic and I'm watching this and I see this and it's like, all right, this guy's in a darkened room, he has a camera, a flashlight, yada, 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 stuff's thrown around, stuff's moving. How do you come back to, you know, like the hardcore skeptic and be like, look, man, what happened to me really happened there? I mean, because they may say that it's like, well, that video just, you know, it ain't good enough for me.
I agree. I completely agree with you. If it wasn't me and I had seen it from somebody else, you know, Joe Blow or whatever, and put this video out, I'd be just like you, man.
Yeah.
Just like you. I would totally not buy it. The situation with that, my second book is going to be published through Llewellyn Worldwide, and that comes out next year. And
hey, let me ask you something.
Go ahead.
How did you get onto Llewellyn? Because that's like the Harvard University of paranormal literature. I've been trying to get on them for years, man. They don't even look at me.
We'll get into that. I'll tell you. It's all in who you know, man, like anything. Okay. But anyways, I write in great detail. I nicknamed this investigation the Nightmare Shop. And okay. Actually, I touched base with the Nightmare Shop in Ghost Voices magazine. I think it was April's issue, maybe. I did a mm-hmm. little write-up on the Nightmare Shop, and I talked a little bit about why the situation was the way it was. And this was an investigation where this guy had been after me to come over there. And, you know, I'm just extremely busy with stuff. And, you know, unfortunately, you have to prioritize these situations. And, sure. when somebody's calling you and they're telling you this stuff, it just sounds just so crazy. I mean, it's like, okay, right. Here we go. And I have to watch in my position, especially now, when you do run, you know, this is going to sound totally arrogant. I don't mean it to be, but when you do run the top rated independent paranormal show, you got to watch these people, especially businesses that see mm-hmm. that. Mm-hmm. And they think, well, we can have them come there, do an episode that's going to bring our sales up.
Sure.
You right. know?
And I have to watch this with people. And then you also have the people that, well, we're going to pretend there's a bunch of stuff, get these guys there, see if they go along with it, and then tell them we made it all up, and we try to bust them. You know, there's just so much crap out there. But And sure. this guy kind of sounded that way. And I feel bad about it now, but it's like, oh, come on, dude. You know, I mean, this is just too unbelievable. Mm-hmm. And I was actually driving down the road that night, and in my truck I carry a low-grade video camera and a flashlight. I mean, I always just have a video camera on me, not for paranormal reasons, just always have one on me. Okay. And anyways, I'm driving down the road, and I'm like a mile from this guy's house.
It seems kind of strange and suspicious, though, but please proceed.
but he calls me, and he says, the crap's hitting the fan again. And I said, well, man, look, I'm actually a mile from your house. I'll swing over. I don't have mm-hmm. any of my equipment. I said, I got a little video camera in the glove compartment, and I'll just check it out. I just basically went there to do a preliminary sweep and just to see if the guy had any legitimacy to his story and then bring back the team later on. Mm-hmm. And when I got in there is what you see in that video. Now, the reason it's dark is because he lost power in the shop. And then okay. that's what you'll read about in the book, is that wasn't under my control. I actually wanted the lights on. I wanted everything on because all of his experiences were with the lights on.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something I try to do. I try to be the client. You know, when we go on these investigations, if they say this is happening at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, the lights are on, we're watching TV, then that's mm-hmm. what we're going to try to recreate.
Right.
But right.
95% of the time, most people's experiences, the witnessing of these occurrences are in the twilight hours when they're in bed or, you know, it's just nighttime. So you mm-hmm. have to be the client. You have to create the same situation. Mm-hmm. And, but in this case, with the Nightmare Shop, it was different. He had no power. He had lost power. That was something he was telling me. He said it's never been without power in there. And
now let me ask Stephen if I could ask you real quick, was it ever determined how the power went out, or do you think you attribute this to something that had to do with this entity?
I can't honestly say it had anything to do with the entity. Okay. He's never got back with me as to why the power was out, so I don't know. I can't answer that, but I do know what happened. You know, and. In my opinion, there's definitely something in there. Why it's there, I don't know. In the video, actually, there's actually a lot more to that than what I released. I just try to cut it down to relevancy. But, you know, there was a rake that came off the wall. I think I might even mention that in the video. There was a rake that came off the wall. But my back was turned, so I couldn't say whether it just fell off because of a vibration by the way I was walking or, you know, that's probably why I didn't even put that in there, but, mm-hmm. you know, it's, I don't know. I did everything I could in that video. I thought there was actually an animal in that garbage can. You know,
see,
I
now that's kind of how it appeared, you know, to me, too.
Yeah, I mean, but that wasn't the case, so I don't know. It's probably okay. one of six cases in 14 years that actually has dumbfounded me and kind of creeped me out. Yeah. I've been attacked before and stuff like that, like that house in Longs I mentioned earlier. But this was, I don't know, it wasn't happy. Whatever's there, you know. But I see what you're saying, man. I totally see what you're saying, and I get it a lot.
Monster I'm sure.
Because that's the biggest, one of our most, what's the word I'm looking for? One of our most commendable traits is also our most damned traits. And like I said earlier, I don't know if you heard or not because you got disconnected, but you know, we only put out episodes based on investigations that produce something that we believe is paranormal. So we don't show you, like ghost hunters, you know, if they, and I'm not talking bad about them, but if they have a season, they have to deliver those that many episodes that season, whether something paranormal or not.
Right.
You know, they got to deliver it. We don't do that. We don't do that. We may have 4 episodes a month, or it may be 4 months without an episode. Because we only show something that delivers something, and I think that sometimes the new fans or the new onlookers see that, oh God, how come every time Monster Vision TV does something, there's something paranormal? But they're not seeing the big picture. Well, dude, it's been 6 months.
So do you think then that causes an unrealistic expectation among people who are the armchair ghost hunters that every time they go out, if say the only show they're watching is yours, do you think that that's creating the expectation that every time they go out something's going to happen? Or do you give your audience a good understanding that, hey, we go to plenty of investigations where nothing happens, we just don't film it or we don't share it?
I don't really say that in the show, but it's speaking engagements, book signings, radio shows, I say that plenty. You know, 95% of the time it's going to be nothing. It's going to be a squirrel in the attic, or it's going to be the kid's alarm clock too close to the bed. That's why they're hallucinating from high electromagnetic fields. You know, this is the stuff people don't see in the show. I don't think, I've never heard that, but that's a very good question. I mean, I've never heard people say, well, your show gives me the perception that there's ghosts everywhere.
They're not going to say that because they're just going to believe it.
Right. I personally believe if people truly watch our show, I think they see the authenticity in it, and I think they see how we do things versus, again, I'm not talking bad about them. They all have their place, but like the network shows, I think those shows do more damage than anything. I really think they do.
Yeah.
I think they're teaching people the wrong thing.
I agree.
All the way around.
Yes.
All the way around.
Well, I couldn't agree more. And I think that that's what's great about, you know, having a having something on the internet is that you can wait that 6 months, year or whatever before you finally put something out there that's solid. Because it's like, man, when you're on television, I'm not saying from experience, of course, but from what I understand, you're almost expected to put something out there, and if you don't, well, you're going to have terrible ratings. Like, you know, recently, I was reading an article about how a somewhat famous medium in the UK was actually told by the producers of the show, well, "We need you to fake stuff," and this medium was like, "I'm not doing it," and walked off the stage. I think that speaks a lot to that person, to their character. So, but that's definitely what's great about, you know, with Monster Vision TV. It's on the internet, and you can wait until you have to put something on there because you don't have to answer to producers.
Exactly, and I'm glad you said that, man. And that's so comforting to hear because, you know, in the past 4 years, I've been offered 2 deals, one by Sci-Fi, mind you, to take this show, and I've turned them both down because I know how these things work. That's sure. One thing I've educated myself on in the past 4 or so years is how the system works. And I actually find it very, what's the word I'm looking for? Yeah, I find it, you know, these producers, they just want to go with the same system that they know is going to work. And it's like, okay, we'll pump out 16 episodes. We're going to make something happen, you know, just so we can sell more episodes. Whereas, dudes, look at my show. You know, I got 2 million views on YouTube, a registered fan base of over 26,000 people on YouTube.
Oh, here he goes.
Have to do that.
Steven,
I
man,
have to
come
do
on,
that.
You're such a big shot.
Well, you know,
you know what I'm saying. You know
I
what
do
saying?
Know.
I
do know what you're
that.
Saying. Right. There is, and I will say there is absolutely tremendous pressure to produce something, anything, to produce something that looks like something as opposed to letting things authentically unfold. Because as all of us know who have spent any time in actual haunted places, sometimes the things that authentically unfold are rather subtle and, you know, they don't play well on TV. And so I can see where the temptation, if you have a TV show, to maybe enhance those things would be, you know, and where do you draw the line?
It's the easy way out, and that's total BS. I mean, it's the easy way out. We have proven with this show that you do not have to do that. That
right.
You do not have to do that, man. And we've proven it with this.
Yeah.
And you can just show people the reality of it. What this show has proven is people are willing to actually see the reality of it, and they're okay with that. You
right.
know, I got a taste of that, and I didn't really like it. You know, I was out in L.A., less than a month ago, filming for a show that's going to come out this fall. And I really did not like what I saw in media across the board. You know, they didn't do it so much with me because they kind of knew my attitude. But the other person that they were interviewing, they were feeding them lines.
Right.
Literally feeding them lines. And it's like, that is not reality.
Well,
right.
I also think that, you know, hurts the field as well. You know, psychical investigation has been around since the 1880s. It has become well organized in the last 10 or so years. And anything that it seems that, but pretty much anything that TV touches, it ruins anyways. And so, yeah, I totally and completely agree with you.
Well, people expect it to be spectacular, and it's not always spectacular. Sometimes it's very, I mean, almost unnoticeable, you know? So.
Well, here's the thing. It can be spectacular. It can be spectacular every time. What it boils down to are the people pushing the buttons, are the people putting that footage together. You can take, like Monster Vision. There's that one little thing that, during that investigation, that made it worth making an episode. And there's that build-up all towards it. It's all in the cuts. And the way everything just works, keeping it entertaining.
Right.
Without having to lie or manufacture stuff.
Right. Now, do you do your own editing? Are you the
Absolutely.
Editor? Well, and that makes a huge... That level of creative control is then what makes you able to do what you do.
And that's why I won't ever sell it. And that's the problem with these shows, is they got a film crew out there filming these guys. Then the film goes to these other guys that weren't even there, and then they put it together, you know, and it just doesn't work that way. You know, my team's in there. My team is the film crew. They hand me all their footage. They give me all their footage. I come home with probably 48 hours worth of tapes, you know, across all these cameras, across all the investigators, and I have to run all those tapes live into my computer, because we actually use film. Run it all live in the computer, so it'll take about a week to get it all in there. And then I have to watch everybody's perspective. You know, investigators that I wasn't even necessarily with that night. You know, they were over in another
room.
I have to watch it all. And then I have to put it all together into an entertaining episode.
And so how long does it take you to edit an episode together then?
It really depends on the investigation. We are entirely at the will of reality. The Vision Hosiery Mill, for instance, that was the season 3 opener back in 2009. That took me a month and a half just to get through all the footage.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because we had so many cameras. But I had exposed myself to it so much, I knew every ounce of it. Every ounce of it, I was able to put it together after that. But then there's some investigations where, you know, it just happens quick, you know, where, okay, I made mental notes the whole time, you know, we were all in the group together the whole time, you know, I could put it all together. It just depends. And, you know, I think that's another thing people like about this show is we're not the four-hour weekend warriors. You know, ghost hunters and all this stuff, they want to make you believe that they can go into a location and in 4 to 6 hours actually conclude on it. Bull crap.
Yeah.
You can't be the client in 4 and 6 hours. You can't do that. There's no way. you know, and that's something people like about us is there's locations I've been researching for over a year and a half. You know, we've done four episodes at a particular location or more. You know, we keep going back. We keep, you just can't expect to conclude on something in one night. It's just impossible. You know, and I think that's what pulls people in is they get to be a part of that. They get to see the evolution of the investigation. And that's one thing I'm really surprised none of these shows have grabbed onto. You know, taking a season, picking three locations, and making the whole season about those three locations. The revisits to those locations. What did you find out this time? What did you find out that time? You know, just build. Why don't they do that? Because that is reality.
Sure.
At least if you're really into paranormal research, that is reality.
Hey, Stephen, I have a really, you know, kind of a particular question about one of your episodes. The house on Luck Avenue that's on the website. Now, why is it that I can't view this one? It seems it says that it's private.
Oh, okay. Well, there's a legal matter.
Okay.
with that one. But what that is, that's actually the Brentwood Wine Bistro. The show I just mentioned earlier that I was filming out in L.A. a couple weeks ago is about that location. That particular location I have researched more than any in my life. That place is my baby. It is the most haunted location I've ever been in my life.
Sure.
And what's you guys probably know who Shannon Sylvia.
Sure, we know Shannon.
Okay, great. Well, I had her and Stephen LaChance, I know you know who he is. I had them in the Brentwood back in April, and that place blew their minds. And it was funny. A few days after Shannon was there, she calls me up and she says, "Dude, I was just talking to this producer, you know, out in L.A., and I was telling him about the Brentwood, blah blah blah." And she's the one that hooked me up with it with this episode or whatever. And just because this place was so cool, but the house on Luck Avenue was just another name for the same place. You know, we had the very first episode was Brentwood, the Haunting of Brentwood Wine Bistro. Then the second episode was Return to Brentwood Wine Bistro. Then the third one was the House on Luck Avenue. The reason I have made that one private is I had actually invited another paranormal team to come in there with me. And the reason I had done that is because I try to expand the research. I want to bring other people in there, get their opinions on it, see if they find something I'm missing, blah, blah, blah. Well, found out some things about this paranormal team I didn't necessarily like, so I removed the episode. That's what it comes down to.
So let's talk about a little bit about the wine bistro. You know, you say that it's so cool, and you seem to be very passionate about what it is that you have, you know, seen, experienced, or documented there. You know, for those who have, you know, haven't seen the episode, you know, can you give us kind of like a thumbnail sketch of the history of the place and you know, the phenomenon that happens there?
Oh, absolutely. And literally, the place is 5 minutes from my house. That's the first gem. Second thing is the house itself was never in that location. It actually sat across the street, and it was just a house that a family lived in, the McCorsley family, Essie and Clarence McCorsley. Well, Essie's husband, Clarence, died very early. He died in his 30s of some kind of cancer. It might have been colon cancer. Effie had this big house to herself, and this business person came along by the name of Mary Platt, and she wanted the property, not the house, she wanted the property, the ground that this house sat on. She wanted to build a business there.
Right.
And Effie McCorsley was adamant about it. She did not want this house destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, this old woman did not want this house destroyed. Now, we can speculate, was it because she knew something was there? Was it her husband? You know, who knows? But she cut the deal with this business person to have the house picked up and moved across the street and put on another piece of property. And what's very unique about it is they moved every aspect of this house, the foundation and all. Typically, you don't do that. You rebuild a foundation, you put the house on. They picked up every aspect of it, all the stonework, everything. So from that point, she ran the house as a bed and breakfast for local fishermen. Well, she died in 1974, and from that point on, the house exchanged hands, and it became restaurants, Grandma's Kitchen, all this other stuff, till eventually it became the Brentwood Wine Bistro. And one thing all the previous owners had in common is they all experienced these shadow entities in the house, and the one owner in the 80s just admittedly accepted them as family. She knew they were there, blah, 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 and the current owners took the place over, had no prior knowledge of any of this, and then they started experiencing these same things, this shadow man walking through the hall, the shadow man walking up and down the steps, and long story short, it got to me, and I said, yeah, I'll come check it out. It's 5 minutes down the street. You know, I had no idea, and that night was one of the most memorable nights in my life, and it always will be. I remember coming home at 5:30 in the morning and crawling into bed and telling my wife what had happened. I saw a 6-foot-tall, solid black silhouette of a man walk behind the bar in that place, and it totally blew my mind. And that place breaks all rules. I call the Brentwood Wine Bistro a conductor. You can actually hear music coming out of nowhere. Some of the best evidence in favor of paranormal phenomena I've gathered from this place. One of the most vivid photographs I've ever taken is of a face in this place. I've caught the shadow entity on film. It's amazing.
I wanted to ask you that. Was that where you had the picture of one of your team members sitting in the chair and behind him is just like this gigantic shadow?
That's actually at the Webb Library.
All right, I apologize. I got a couple of the episodes mixed up.
That's a really cool place, too. The stuff at the Brentwood, there was a face in the mirror, and it's a very vivid face, and it actually kind of fits that characteristic, the profile of, an Irish drunken fisherman, because she ran this place as a bed and breakfast for fishermen. The shadow entity, when I took the photograph of the shadow entity, And I showed it to the owners, and they said that's the exact same thing we've been seeing. I mean, that just blew my mind. I mean, and the voices we got there, the stuff that when Shannon and Stephen LaChance were there, the voices, this guy was literally confirming everything I had gathered over the past year and a half. We're asking, were you the face in the mirror? Out of nowhere, a male voice comes out and says, yes.
Okay, hold on a second there, Stephen. Hold that thought, because I want to get to, theories on who these entities may be, because, the history of a place always interests me. But we are up at the top of the hour. We do need to take a break. Okay, cool. I'm going to throw it over to Cheryl. You are listening to Paranormal Underground Radio at ztalkradio.com. And we are talking to Stephen David Lancaster, the creator of Monster Vision, the brilliant MonsterVisionTV.com. Stick around.
Hi, this is Karen Frazier, author of Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, a new book from Ghost Night Media. In summer of 2009, I visited Wellington, Washington, a former railroad town in the Cascade Mountains of Washington State, where the worst avalanche disaster in the history of the United States occurred. 96 people lost their lives. What I found there changed my life forever. Before I visited Wellington, I wasn't sure that I believed in ghosts or even in the human soul. Now I know for sure that ghosts are real and that our souls go on after we die. You can read all about my experiences at Wellington in my new book, Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, which is on sale at Amazon.com. To learn more, visit avalancheofspirits.com.
That you can talk to your favorite show hosts from the ZTalk Radio Network? Check out the forum and see what it's all about at ztalkradio.com. Your assignment is to listen to The Buzz on Monday nights from 8 to 10 p.m. Central on ztalkradio.com. This message will self-destruct.
Go. I know what you are. You drive too fast, you smell so good, and you dress fashionably well.
Say it out loud.
You're a metrosexual?
Oh, why do I always get that? I'm a radio show host.
Kale, I want to be one of you.
And you can be. Join me on ztalkradio.com, 9 p.m. Eastern on Sunday nights. The show's called Perspective.
Hey, do you sparkle?
Oh my God, don't even start. Hang on, Spider Monkey.
Radio Network.
Okay, Rick, hey. I know I said bring us back, but I've got to ask Cheryl, what the hell was that?
Yeah, what was that?
Wasn't that a cool song? That's like, I think the first time we've ever played it. It was called, it's by a band called Diablo Swing Orchestra.
I love the name.
I've forgotten. It's like Balrog Boogie, or I don't know what it's called, but it's
it was very interesting.
Different. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now Rick, you can bring us back, but I just had to know. Sorry.
Thank you, Garen. Hey, everybody, welcome back to Paranormal Underground Radio, and we're here on ZooTalkRadio.com, and we're talking with Stephen Lancaster of Monster Vision TV, and we were talking about evidence before we went.
We were. It was so long ago, and then we got thrown off by that that thing, the giggly thing.
There was dead air, man. That's some scary stuff. So okay, we were talking about the Wine Bistro, okay, about how it is just your absolute favorite place, and we were talking about the Shadow Man. Now, did you guys do any kind of historical research and maybe try and figure out who this shadow figure was in life?
Absolutely, for a good year, we were thinking, it was the McCorsley family, mm-hmm. because we were getting female voices on recordings. The shadow entity that I saw behind the bar was tall, very proper, good posture. He just fit that Clarence McCorsley look, according to the pictures. The shadow entity that I filmed at the bottom of the stairs, same thing. And, mm-hmm. The whole time we're thinking McCorsley's, and what really, really led me to believe that is, it's about a year ago to the day, my case manager had tracked down the great-great-grandson of the McCorsley family.
Okay.
And she was telling him what was going on in this building, and he hadn't been in there since 1974 when his great-grandmother died. So he hadn't been in there for 36 years at this point. And mm-hmm. he agreed to come down and meet me in the building and talk about it. He was going to bring pictures of the family. This was going to further the research. I was going to see what else I could figure out. And when he walked into the building for the first time in 36 years, the lights in the building flickered 19 times. Everything just
That's
led
amazing.
To a... Yes, everything just led to it being McCorsley. Mm-hmm. everything led to it being the original family. But back in January, we went back in there on the anniversary date of the very first time we ever went in there. It was a year to the day.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when we took the shot. That's when we took that picture of the face coming out of this mirror. Mm-hmm. And that face isn't a McCorsley. Like okay. I said, it looks like this Irish barroom brawler fisherman type. And, I started thinking in another direction. Okay, Essie lost her husband when he was young. Mm-hmm. she started running this bed and breakfast for fishermen. Obviously, this woman got down again. You know what I mean? There's no doubt about it. Was it with a fisherman? Is that who this is? So now... we're going a completely different direction. It's not Clarence McCorsley. This is some other guy. And that night that Shannon Sylvia and Stephen LaChance was there, and actually Jeff Sylvia was there, Phil Summers was there, a lot of people were there that night. We all witnessed this stuff. We're asking these questions, are you the face in the mirror? And this man's voice comes out and says, yes. And while this was going on, what a dumbwaiter is? In a kitchen,
yes.
Like this little elevator. Well, mm-hmm. this elevator would only react to singing. When you would sing, this elevator would go up or come down, right on cue. But not if you sung anything modern. You'd have to sing old music, like Etta James. You sing Etta James, this thing would react. So we ask a question, are you the one making the dumbwaiter go up and down? Yes, in the same exact male voice. So
see, now
we have this guy... confirming
that's,
all this stuff.
Right, but that's kind of interesting, though. I mean, Etta James, we're talking like the 1950s.
Yes.
So is this entity of that time era?
Which would totally make sense. The house was built in the early 1900s.
Okay.
Clarence McCorsley died in the 30s. After that, the house got picked up, moved across the street, and that's when his wife started running it as a bed and breakfast for fishermen, which would have been in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, and then she died in the early 70s.
Okay.
Okay.
Interesting.
So it's great.
I have a question about it. So you were, because this is something that interests me and I'm trying to figure out. I'm a musician, and so that's why I think this way. If you sang to it that this would happen, what if you just played music from the era as opposed to actually making the music yourself?
I'm so glad you asked that question. Okay, this whole scenario went on for 45 minutes. The beginning of this scenario, there were 26 people in the building that night. We were actually having a paranormal conference. That's why Shannon Sylvia was there and Stephen LaChance and everybody. And we split up into groups. So I'd taken my group into the kitchen where the dumbwaiter was at. And I didn't know it at the time, but one of the girls in my group was actually on American Idol. and she brings it up, and I was like, really? And she's like, yeah, I was on American Idol, went out to California, all this other crap. And I said, okay, you know, I got to go get another tape for my camera, and I walk out of the kitchen. Well, while I'm out of the kitchen, she says, you know, if I start singing for you, would you do something for me? Well, no sooner does she say that, the stove fires up, flames and all. Okay. That's about the point I walk back into the kitchen with my camera, you know, fully loaded. And they tell me what happened. Look, and I can see the stove's got flames on it. I was just, okay, well, you said you were going to sing, so go ahead and sing. This girl starts singing, and it put cold chills down my spine.
Mm.
Phenomenal singer. Oh, my God. She started busting out At Last from Etta James, and aside from her just being a phenomenal singer, the dumbwaiter started reacting. She'd sing again, it would react again. And what's beautiful about this scene is the fact that you can see the switch to the dumbwaiter on the wall in every frame of the video. Okay. Nobody is touching it. You know what I'm saying? It's moving on its own.
It's phenomenal.
Meanwhile, there's a group upstairs, which is Shannon and Stephen LaChance and all them. And when the dumbwaiter comes on, a light comes on up in the upstairs bar. And, of course, that's to let the waiters know that the food's coming up. So they're seeing this as we're doing this down in the kitchen. And, you know, they're radioing us, you guys turning that light on, and, of course, I'm telling them what's going on. Eventually, all 26 people get congregated into the kitchen. All of us are in there to see this phenomenon.
Okay.
Luckily, we had a reporter from the North Myrtle Beach Times there that night, which is funny. He was a total non-believer, and he left that night telling me that I've changed his life. But he was there that night, and he says, you know what? The song that you're singing is actually my ringtone on my cell phone for when my wife calls. So when his wife calls, you know, it's Etta James At Last. So we decided to do a test, and he puts the phone up in the air and plays At Last through the cell phone, the dumbwaiter reacts just like it did if the girl was singing it.
Hmm.
That's phenomenal. Hey, Stephen.
All on video.
That's good to be able to catch something like that. Yeah, Stephen, we have a question from the chat room from Cali Girl. Her question is, do you do any research on your locations, and do you put them in your shows?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Depending on the episode and depending on the permissions from the client. You know, I can only release what the client is comfortable with me releasing.
Sure.
That's something else you probably notice with Monster Vision. You don't see a lot of the clients in the show because in reality, most of them don't want to be seen. You know, this isn't a network show again. This isn't somebody being paid $2,000 to appear as a client. You know,
right. They
tell us if they went on it or they don't. It's very rare. I think I can count on one hand across 50 episodes, clients that actually wanted to appear in an episode. And that goes for the history, too. Some of these are private cases, and they allow us to show the episode as long as we don't disclose the location. And, you know, because of that, we can't really publicly say the history. Perfect example. Most of you have probably seen the movie, what's it called? 1408. It's John Cusack, Samuel L. Jackson. Okay. Mm-hmm. And it's about a hotel. This is a true story. There was an author who made a living. He would travel across the country, and he would stay in these hotels, and he would write about these allegedly haunted rooms. He would stay there for free because the hotels knew he was going to write about them, and it would up their sales. It would up their revenue. Well, this is true. Well, the hotel, for instance, that this guy actually did die in, Monster Vision TV shot an episode at it.
Oh.
And we were actually permitted to, you know, investigate this room that was in question, blah, blah, blah. But we could not say this was the hotel that this guy died in. And even if you remember 1408, they don't ever tell you, they give you a fictitious area where it's at. But when the narrator's talking, it's some hotel on the East Coast. You know, they don't actually tell you where it's at. Well, when we had done the investigation, I think it was in 2009, when we had done it, the room in question, they had actually turned into storage for the housekeeping. You know, the extra towels, their cleaning supplies. They don't even let anybody stay in that room anymore. And in that room in particular, we got an EMF read of over 220.
Now, did you, are you, that's pretty high. Are you sure it wasn't anything that was naturally occurring or wires or what?
That's possible. The building's very old. It's a historical building. When we were up in the attic of this location, there's no shielding at all. Wires just layered the floor of the attic. What was interesting about that room is we were getting these reeds in the center of the room. And you know, it doesn't even matter if it's anything paranormal or not. If you were staying in that room with electromagnetic fields that are 220, you're going to go insane. Who knows what you would do? I mean, it made me ill. In 35 minutes, I couldn't even stand to be in that room anymore.
But let me ask you this, because I know that it's, you know, it's very popular nowadays to believe that high EMFs can cause somebody to have hallucinations, and I don't doubt that, but do you think that it's possible that high EMFs could actually fuel and amp, you know, up paranormal, you know, phenomenon, what's going on? I mean, you know, with things like, with like EM pumps and all that, do you think that that's possible?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. It's all in how you monitor it, and it's all in how you document the data. You know, when you do an initial sweep of the house, you sweep everything from the temperatures to the EMF fields across the board. Every room from the floor to the ceiling to the wall, this is what people need to be doing. They need to be documenting all this stuff before they even begin. You know, make note of all this stuff. EMF fields, for the most part, are fairly stagnant. They stay in one location. You put your EMF meter up against an alarm clock, it's going to blow your freaking mind. How many EMFs are coming off of that alarm clock. What it is when you come back to that room and the EMF that when you were standing in the center was 0.02 and now all of it's, you know, it's 7.10, okay, something's going on. EMF fields don't really naturally move like that.
Right.
But when you can actually follow and track a moving field, that's when you're on to something. And sure, the more energy that's in these areas, the more opportunity you could have to witness spiritual activity. You know, the cowboy apparition that I filmed that ended up on NBC, it was in an electrical room of a building. You know, breaker boxes. I mean, the entire power of this building was in this room, and that's the room that this apparition was filmed. Perfectly makes sense to me. There's all the energy in the world for this thing to feed off of.
Right.
Use, manifest, do whatever it wanted. You know,
So I have a quick question about the EMF, because my husband works at a power plant, and it actually has part of the major north-south grid for the western United States running to the plant. I've gone and stood under those wires before, which Mm-hmm. Now, if I was holding an EMF reader, an EMF detector, my guess is that thing would read off the map, just go crazy in there. I've stood there for quite some time, other than being nervous by that wah-wah-wah noise it makes, and like the zzz, because you can actually hear the power zipping across the wires, it crackles and stuff. Aside from that, I've never felt any anxiety or had any, you know, anything that people indicate happens when you're around significant amounts of EMF.
Well, let me ask you this, and you don't have to answer this question, mm-hmm. but have you ever smoked pot?
Karen?
Yes.
Okay. Now, have you ever smoked pot during the day, like sitting on the beach or when it's sunny, you know, everything's happy? That pretty much determines your mood when you're on pot. But have you ever smoked pot when it's dark or you're watching a horror movie? You become freaking mm-hmm. paranoid. Everything makes you freaking scared. And that's the same way with EMF. It's all mood-driven. You know, if you're under a power line in broad daylight, what is there really to be scared of? You know, giant worms coming up out underneath the ground? Nothing. You know what I mean? But if you're in a dark house and you're there thinking that the clients told you that they were attacked or objects that have been thrown at them, and then you get exposed to these EMFs, it starts messing with those thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And then
okay.
that's what causes that stuff.
Okay, that makes sense. Okay, absolutely. So my experiment standing under the power lines is entirely invalid. Got it!
but at the same time, though, not necessarily. I mean, electromagnetic fields affect people differently. For years, they never bothered me. Ever. You know, some people are very sensitive to them. For mm-hmm. other people, it doesn't even bother. And it wasn't until this hotel from that movie that we were talking about was the very first time it actually bothered me. You know, I'm walking down the hall. We don't even have any EMFs out. Well, the guy in front of me does. And I said, stop, dude, stop, right here. And he brings that EMF back, and there was a read that was off the charts. Mm-hmm. I actually felt it. That was the first time I'd actually felt it without actually looking at it on a meter. And like I said, in that same room that they no longer even let people stay in, I couldn't stand to even be in there. It wasn't because of being scared or you know, worried about having a heart attack or whatever. It, mm-hmm. it was, you just did not want to be in that room. It just made you nauseous, or me anyway. It made me, I wanted to get out of it, you know, and it had nothing to do with a ghost, per se.
I don't think I've ever had anything like that happen to me before. I mean, you know, where I work, we have all sorts of like electrical stuff going on, and I mean, there's definitely a ghost where I work because I've seen it, and several other people have. But you know, I've never experienced anything like that before.
Well, hey, speaking of which, have you seen the most recent preview for the upcoming Monster Vision episode?
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen that?
Oh, no, I have not.
I think this is probably going to be my favorite episode to date.
Cool.
I really do. Oh, man, the stories there, everything you want to hear as a mm-hmm. paranormal researcher and everything you don't want to hear as a paranormal researcher is there.
We actually
documented in this house. We pulled down the attic door and the attic screamed at us. It actually screamed at us, and we got it on two different video cameras.
What did it say?
Yeah, what
get
did?
Out!
No, it actually screamed. This house, you guys probably know the house, but don't know the house.
Okay.
Back in 2007, this girl, Miss Hooser, I believe that's how you pronounce her name, had killed her 11-month-old baby in this house.
Okay.
And she put the body in the attic. Okay. This made worldwide
I know what you're talking about. I know what you're talking about. Gotcha.
And
okay.
Six months later, the FBI finds the body. It's nothing but skeletal remains. Mm-hmm. An anthropologist from North Carolina, the chief medical examiner, none of these people could actually determine the cause of death of this baby. So they couldn't mm-hmm. actually convict this woman of murder. So they first degree, so they charged her with second degree, and she's still in prison. Well, 4 years later, this family moves into the house, unknowing of what had happened there. The landlord didn't tell them. And within a few weeks, they're experiencing these crazy things. The children are being attacked, violent voices, you know, all the stuff you want to hear. And pretty much a month to the day of them moving into this house, we went up to do an investigation. And we were tracking a moving EMF field. We were EMF field in one of the areas they claimed to have seen this shadow entity. And it led us to the attic, of course. We pull down the attic door, you know, which has this drop-down ladder. You know, you fold-away ladder. We drop it down. My investigator's in front of me. He starts going up the ladder. I'm right behind him. Then this scream just comes out of the attic. And what was crazy about it is it wasn't like one person screaming. It was like a group, like four or five people screaming in unison down out of that attic. And it stopped us all in our tracks. Wow. It stopped us all. You know, and we all acknowledge the fact that it was some kind of screaming, and it is as vivid as I'm talking to you right now on these videotapes. It's so awesome. I cannot wait
to... So when's this episode coming out?
I'm hoping at the end of this month. I want to get it out by the end of this month. But the preview, you know, we're calling the episode The House of Shadows. And The House of Shadows... I released the preview about a week ago, and it's already over like 11,000 hits on YouTube. It's crazy. But people are really looking forward to this one. And you'll see, you'll see in the preview of the episode, it kind of picks up in one section right after we hear the scream. You just kind of hear our reactions and talking about it, because obviously we weren't going to give away the scream in the preview. But
of course.
you'll see, man, I think it's going to be a great episode. And it's just
amazing.
That one thing. There was other things that happened and everything, and this is a perfect example of Monster Vision, but there was that one piece, that one thing, that scream that was unexplainable, that, okay, we're going to make this an episode. It's worth it.
Outstanding.
To show people that, you know.
That's the stuff that keeps you coming back for more, isn't it?
Oh, definitely. You know what keeps me coming back for more is when...
I need something like that, man. I'm in my paranormal agnostic phase right now, so I need a good scream from an attic.
Hey,
I've been hit a few times.
I guarantee it.
Hey, Stephen, we have a question from chat from Mike. He wanted to know, was that a moving AC field?
Going back to that.
I'm not quite certain. Mike wanted to know what a moving AC about. What was that? A moving AC field?
Like AC/DC?
No,
probably
not Highway
AC,
to Hell.
No, like AC current.
Yeah,
would be my guess.
It could have been possible. We shut down everything at the time that was happening. The actual central air, the air conditioning was running. And, of course, you know, that runs wires through the whole building. And I had actually said to my case manager, I said, turn the AC off, because I actually thought it was the AC. Because the AC kicked on, everything kind of started. It was all at the same time. And she kicked the AC off, but everything else, it was all still there. And then it started moving, and I thought, well, okay, it wasn't the air conditioning, you know, because we kicked that off. Because if he's talking about the same place, when we were in the attic, we started getting these high reads, then they would go away. Then they'd come back, then they would go away. And what we were finding out was every time the air conditioning would kick on, the K2 would go off, the EMS would spike. You know, of course, you know, that's what that was. But this was different. This was taking a field that was standing in the center, or I say standing, but that was in the center of the room, then moved to the closet. Then went up to the top of the closet where the attic would be, then back down, then out of that room and out to where the other attic entrance was. I mean, it was just too sporadic. I mean, wires don't follow that pattern. I mean, I mean, I'm sure it's possible. I mean, I wouldn't rule that out. I mean, without ripping the house apart and really doing it. And of course we will be back again, and we may find out that that's the case. But
you know,
it wasn't following a pattern. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. You know, I wanted to talk to you about that. You know, you reference ripping a house apart. Have you ever been on any kind of investigation where the homeowner is like, "I'm telling you, there's people buried underneath the house," and they're like, "Can you dig it up?" Have you ever had anything like that before?
Well, no, they've never told us to dig anything up. But we've done cases where the ownership has given us permission to pretty much do what we wanted. And I won't say we broke things, but we've got into areas that most people wouldn't. And, you know, one in particular, one thing that was baffling us was this high electromagnetic field over this table in this dining area. And it just didn't make any sense. I mean, it didn't make any sense. I mean, it was in the center of the floor, you know, up on this table. It just didn't make any sense, especially around the table. There was nothing there. And anyways, we ended up crawling underneath the building. You know, here down south, there's no basements. It's just crawl spaces. You know, so we crawl underneath this building. I mean, dude, covered in spiders, roaches, you name it. It was totally disgusting. But we crawl underneath there, and we track, and we find a junction box right underneath where this, and the reason we knew that is we kept a team up top so they could stomp on the floor, you know, where the table was. And we kind of tracked that sound. We got underneath them, and sure enough, there was this junction box that was giving off that high EMF. If we would have never went underneath the building, we would have never known that. And you know, most teams would have thought, oh, it's a ghost, you know. But you got to do everything you can to try to prove that it's not before anything else.
Absolutely. Yeah, because you don't want to go to somebody and say, hey, you know what, we do think that you have a ghost in your house, and all it is basically mice in the walls. I've actually had that happen before. Have you ever had that happen in a case where it's
I tell you, one of the best tools that I have is what they call a heat seeker. Have you ever seen, and I'm not talking about a missile, have you ever seen these things?
I certainly hope not, because the military would want to talk to you.
Well, they'd probably be okay with it, but... It's this device. It actually looks a lot like a temperature gun. Okay. Same shape, you know, you're holding it like a temperature gun. But this thing shoots out a laser that'll actually go about 900 feet. Okay, and what's beautiful about this thing is it's a lot like thermal imaging where it'll go through things. It'll go through walls, you know, through trees. The very first investigation we ever used this thing was actually out in the woods. We were doing a crypto case, and we were using it to try to find body heat, thus the name Heat Seeker. Well, this thing has been my best friend. You don't know how many cases I've debunked within an hour because of this device. You know, we go into someone's house, and they're telling us, you know, we're hearing these footsteps in the attic. There's somebody walking across the attic. And I pull out this little heat seeker. Again, it's like a little temperature gun, and I just aim it at the ceiling and start sweeping my hand, and then, of course, it beeps. It picked up body heat, which means it's a living creature. You know, so it's the mouse, or it's the squirrel, or it's a bat. You know, I mean, that has come in handy so many times. You know, but, you know, another team could go in there and not have a device like that, and who knows? You know, they tell the people, like you just said, well, there's definitely a ghost up there. We heard it walking, too. You know, it's funny. The quickest case I ever solved was within 15 minutes. In 15 minutes. And, you know, when you're a true paranormal researcher, you have to be many things. You have to be a doctor. You have to be a carpenter. You have to be an electrician. You have to be a psychologist. You have to educate yourself on all these things.
You forgot plumber.
Plumber. You know.
Hold on a second, Stephen. I am so glad that you said that, because I've been saying stuff like that for years now. I mean, you have to know about structural integrity and all sorts of neat stuff. You got to know about all that.
These are just the facts, and that's what kills me. And you know, I'm not saying to talk bad about people, but you know, don't watch a TV show and think you can go do this. You walk into a house and you hear a creak. Oh my God, it's a ghost. Is it, or is it just humidity? You know, shifting the wood of this door. I mean, these are the things you got to think about. And the quickest case I ever solved was a business. They called me up and they said, dude, every morning, literally about the same time, there's somebody walking across the second floor and we can hear it from the first floor.
Sure.
And I'm like, so it's like the same time? So I'm thinking, you know, this is residual. You know, this is happening at the same time. And mm-hmm. he says, yeah. And I said, well, what time do you get there? And he says, we get there about 7 o'clock. I said, I'll meet you there at 6:30 in the morning. Mm-hmm. And this isn't lights out. You know, this is being the client. And, mm-hmm. and I get there, and I meet him. And we walk into the business. And he goes, okay, just stand here, man. I'm telling you. Sure mm-hmm. enough, I hear it. Boom, mm-hmm. boom, 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 boom. Right across the floor up above our heads.
Okay.
And I was like, okay. I was like, and he goes, it'll happen again, man. I'm telling you, it'll happen again. And I said, well, how long does it take before it happens again? He said, just a couple minutes. And I said, well, what do you normally do when you walk in? He said, well, I come in the front door, and then I unlock these other doors, and then I go outside, and I unlock the bathroom doors. I said, go outside and unlock the bathroom doors. So he does
okay.
that. Then I hear it again. Doom, 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 doom. He comes back in. I said, dude, go over there and turn your AC off. He turns the AC off. We don't hear it no more. I said, here's what's happening, man. Your AC ducts are going across this floor. Those AC ducts have flaps in them. When mm-hmm. you walk through that door in the morning, when it's 115 degrees outside, you're letting all that hot air in here, which is causing the AC to kick on. And it's causing those flaps to open up. And when the AC turns off, because there's air current going through that vent, those flaps aren't falling at the same time. They're falling in order.
Boom, sure.
Boom. So I said, then you go outside to open up the bathroom doors. You just open another door and let more heat in. It's kicking it on again. It was nothing more than his air conditioning unit.
Now, let me ask you this.
The vent going through his ceiling was making that sound.
Hmm. Now, if you're anything like me, does that kind of, I don't know, maybe disappoint you just a little bit?
Yeah. I mean, to a degree.
I mean, be honest. Yeah,
it does to a degree, but at the same mm-hmm. time, I love those kind of things because it keeps me sharp.
Exactly.
Keeps me, you know, it's like, and it educates people. You know, now this guy, he's like, oh man, I'm an idiot. He's like, you know, here I'm thinking there's a ghost, you know, and he was telling people he had a ghost, and you know, maybe another investigator would have went in there and said, yeah, it is. Look, every time I hear that sound, my EMF spikes. Of course it does. The AC just kicked on. You know, but you know, you have to be the AC guy. You know, you have to be all these things. If you don't know all these things, you cannot actually conclude on these cases. I'm sorry, you can't. You know, there's some things that I've seen, crazy phenomena with electricity, where I've contacted electricians, you know, and said, is this possible? Does this do this? Does this do that? And they've educated me on this stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, but I think the sad part is so many people go out there and they just take everything for face value. And it's almost like they want to believe so bad, they mm-hmm. refuse to go beyond that. Okay, the door opened by itself, it's a ghost, let's leave it at that.
Well, it's a complete and utter lack of critical thinking skills because, you know, ghosts and belief in ghosts can be just as dogmatic as anything else.
Hmm.
So,
I like that word.
Dogmatic.
Dogmatic. I love it.
See, I like to say that people are all too willing to commit intellectual suicide these days. It's like, wow, okay, the door closed by itself, door opened by itself. Well, it must be a ghost. Well, no, not necessarily. It means you got, you know, crappy locks on your door.
Well, yeah. Tell me mainstream ghost hunting does not have dogma. It does.
Oh, sure.
Well, look, I'll tell you this. One of the most disheartening things I ever heard, I should have expected it. You know, I was talking to a producer, a pretty well-known producer, and I was mentioning to him a pitch for a new show. And what I wanted this show to be was basically putting paranormal teams on trial, putting them in locations, telling them the history of the place, telling them the claims, putting them in there, filming them, watching them from afar, and then when they come out, let them tell you what they would tell a client. And then basically judging them on it.
Wait, isn't that a show?
Don't start.
Oh, okay, sorry.
I registered this idea. It's called Ghost Trials. I registered it back in 2009, and now Zachy Baggins is doing something very similar. But anyway.
Oh.
His show's a little more sugar-coated. I really wanted it to be brutal. I wanted it to be like Hell's Kitchen, Simon Cowell, of paranormal investigating.
That'd
where
awesome.
These people that just do not belong out there doing this, telling these clients these things is just wrong. And I wanted there to be a show that actually just shut these people up. Just shut them up. You don't need to be telling people they got some demon in their house. You guys are idiots. Right. Why are you telling this family that? You know, and I'd come up with this concept, and I'm pitching it to this guy. And he says, well, I'll run it by a few networks and see what they say. He comes back with me with a phrase that pissed me off. He said, man, it's a cool idea, but they all came back with the same thing. People don't want their paranormal busted.
Wow.
So there you go. There's a producer, there's network saying they don't want the paranormal busted. They want to just keep it out there, keep faking all this stuff, keep...
Sure, it's a cash cow.
You know, leading you in the wrong... But the funny thing is, you could put out a show that actually showed the reality of it, the truth, the educational side, and I guarantee you it would be just as entertaining. I guarantee it. You'd have people sitting there thinking, man, I didn't know an AC unit would do that.
Yeah.
You know, some guy sitting in their house happened to turn on the show that night. He's experiencing the same thing, these sounds in his attic, and then he watches this show. Oh, you know what? That's probably my AC.
That's why people watch Mythbusters. Mythbusters does that with urban legends. So,
yeah, if you can bust myths, why can't you bust the paranormal?
Yeah. See, I got a quick story for you guys. Maybe about 7 or 8 months ago, we had an investigation. Steve and my group, we do mostly private homes. And I would not have known that my wife was trying to text me if the K2 meter wasn't going off every time she texted me. And it was like, finally I realized, and I always keep count of how many times EMF goes off because I, you know, like to write that kind of stuff down and keep a note of it. And she was texting me like 6 times. Sure enough, the K2 meter was going off 6 times. So I think that a lot of people, I agree with you, they don't understand that, you know, things like cell phones or even so much as like air conditioning louvers is going to cause this stuff to, you know, to go boom.
Even cell phones that are turned off can make K2 meters go boom. We had that we had that happen up at Wellington with Rob St. Helen, who's one of the writers for Paranormal Underground. He writes about the Haunted Heathman Hotel. And we were up there and his K2 was going off and all of our cell phones were turned off, and it was still the iPhone, even when you turn it off, does something that it's trying to ping a tower or something, even turned off what powered down, that was making that K2 bounce around.
I think K2s are probably the most useless tool. I really do. They're more of the novel weekend warrior tool they're going to get their rocks off. Oh wow, the lights came on.
That's because people think that they can actually have a conversation where it says yes or no. It's like with the flashlights, the same thing with the flashlights.
Don't even get me started on that. I mean, you know, loosening the head of it. No kidding. If you got some guy on your team that has a low voice, it's going to vibrate it. It's going to make it go. You know, if somebody steps across the floor, it's going to make it go. You know, the best thing we ever filmed, you know, you mentioned the big shadow entity behind the guy sitting in the chair. At the Webb Library, we laid out 6 flashlights. And these are flashlights that you have to push the back of them, the buttons, to make them work. And we actually filmed a scenario where we would say, make this one come on, and it would come on. Okay, make this one come on. We were orchestrating which lights and made them come on command.
That's cool.
You know? But yeah, it's all this novel stuff. The K2, loosening the flashlights. I mean, it's all just people that want it to happen so bad. You know, they're just not willing to put in the work. They're not willing to put in those 50 investigations for that one that actually is real. You know.
See, I kind of wanted to ask you about this what I want to know, how do you feel that? Okay, say you put, like, a ball in the middle of the room, and you got, like, you know, 5 people standing around it. Okay, move this ball, move this ball, move this ball. All of a sudden, the ball rolls. Now, I've actually had experiments myself where it was, like, somehow, some way, all of this energy created by this group of people looking at this ball and making it roll is like, you know, like telekinetically making it go.
Psychokinesis.
Exactly. I mean, have you ever noticed anything like that in your own, you know, research and investigations?
Not necessarily in that scenario. I've watched investigators kind of lead themselves in their own direction by the power of belief or the power of suggestion. You know, and I've actually done it to mess with and test my investigators sometimes. You know, I've kind of said certain things or led them to believe certain things, and then they go with it. Mm-hmm. You know, and they truly believe it. In scenarios like that, I mean, there's so many factors that could play into that, depending on the size of the room, if the room is closed. You're talking about, okay, 5-6 people huddled around this ball. If it's an enclosed room, the body heat, the temperature is going to start to rise in that room. It's going to cause the oxygen level to lower. I mean, these are physics.
Right.
This is physics. You know, it can cause things to move. You know, that's the thing with poltergeist activity. You know, poltergeist activity can happen. All you need is high electromagnetic fields, very high electromagnetic fields, and it's not a ghost. You know, objects can move. A field can actually push an object if it's high enough. And that's not a ghost.
Right.
You know, I just don't understand why people don't educate themselves, man.
No, well, you know what? I think it's because with a lot of people, physics is too difficult to understand. Like, ask Karen, I'm an idiot when it comes to quantum mechanics and all that. hey, Stephen. Now, somebody in the chat room is very adamantly wanting us to ask you about your spectral probe. I'm kind of nervous asking about something like that, but
yeah, we're feeling like this was a setup sex question, is it not?
Yeah, maybe you can set up here. So with your spectral probe, go.
You know, I got people that just like to break my balls over the way I name things that I create, and I happen to make this device, and I call it a spectral probe, and it gets a lot of jokes because it's called the spectral probe. But, you know, spectral.
You know, if Ford can make a probe, you can make a probe.
You know, it just shows you the sick minds of the people that I surround myself with. That's just what it comes down to. But, you know, spectral is ghost. Probe, I am probing for ghosts. You know, it's nothing sexual, guys. Let's let it go. But basically, what this is, it's a device on a staff. There's a light at the end of the staff. Behind the light is an EMF meter. Behind the EMF meter is a camera that shoots across the staff that's filming what's in front of the staff. And there's also a magnetic pickup. And the magnetic pickup is hooked to an amplifier. So if I walk into a magnetic field, I will actually hear it. You know, the louder the white noise, the stronger the magnetic field is. I can actually hear electromagnetic fields. I don't need an EMF meter. I can hear them with this device. Mm-hmm. Well, this is a light that has no power. And if the EMF field is high enough, it will make this light come on. Okay, this is the theory that has been proven 3 times.
Okay.
Once was in the Brentwood Wine Bistro. The very first time I field tested it, I walked on the second floor of the Brentwood Wine Bistro where I'd seen the shadow entity. That freaking light came on. That means some form of energy was powering this light.
Right.
It powered it. It made it come on. The second time was at the Country Squire, which is a Scottish restaurant in up in North Carolina. It happened twice there. And the second time it happened there, one of my investigators was actually able to talk the temperature gauge up and down to a point. He would say, okay, let's say it was 69 degrees. This light comes on. The spectral probe comes on. He says, all right, if that's you making this light come on, make it go from 69 degrees to 62.6. Bam, 62.6. I mean, we were getting, you know, there was spiritual energy there. There was no doubt about it. But it baffled me because of the many people I've talked to. You know, my father's a rocket scientist. He actually works for a government defense agency. And, you know, that's that side of me. And, you know, I'm talking to him about it. I'm like, you know, what could possibly make a light come on without any known power? You know, and he's like, there's nothing. You know, it's impossible. You know, and one of my other team members, his dad's a doctor, and we were talking to him, and It's amazing. There was some form of energy there that makes this thing work. It's just another, I build a lot of experimental devices, and that's just one of them, and certain people like to bust my nuts about how I name these things.
Well, no, there's the inductive probe, which it sounds like you were talking about a little bit, which allows you to hear the EMF.
Yeah.
So, I mean, things are named. It's okay. I just thought, yeah. And actually, to tell you the truth, I'm sitting back from my computer screen, and I don't have my glasses on, so I can't see well. And when Cheryl typed it in the chat window, I thought it said special probe. So I'm glad that you, that's why I thought it was dirty. That's why I'm glad you asked about it, because I would have said special probe. That's what I thought it said, and I'm thinking, okay.
Yeah. I thought we were going to, like, alien abduction type stuff.
That's right, giving Cartman that anal probe. So, we just have about 5-10 minutes left of the show. And so I wanted to give you the opportunity to give websites, book titles, anything that you think that our listeners would like to hear in order to locate you, watch your show, and all of that.
Yeah, what are you shilling, dude?
Well, guys, I've really had a blast.
It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, great show.
You guys are great. You guys are great. I love doing shows that are different. I just hate the cookie cutter shows. The shows that ask the same freaking questions, and I feel like a broken record. I really enjoyed it, guys. I just want to thank you guys for having me on.
Great. Thank you so much for coming on. So, website is?
Let's see. StephenLancaster.com. That's Stephen spelled with a P-H. That'll lead you everywhere. That leads you to all the projects I'm doing, the documentaries, whatever.
Okay.
It's all there.
Okay. And you're on
TV,
Facebook and Twitter, too?
Yes. And you know what? Surprisingly, on Facebook, my address is Facebook/paranormalresearch.
Hey, congratulations.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm the guy. Yeah, I'm the one that got that. How about that?
I'll be
outstanding.
Okay, and so I'm sorry, and you were giving out the show website.
Oh, monstervisiontv.com, or, just go to YouTube, type in Monstervision TV is one word, and it'll bring you to the MonsterVision TV profile, and you can watch every episode to your heart's content. That's another thing about us.
Okay.
It's all there, anytime you want it.
And the book that's coming out, it will be out when?
Well, the book that's out now is called Paranormal Investigator. You can get it at Barnes & Noble, Amazon, Books A Million, wherever. But the book that's coming out next year is called True Case Files of a Paranormal Investigator. And that will be released in August of 2012.
Very cool. Just before the world ends. Awesome.
Yes.
Okay, well, thank you. Thank you so much for coming on.
One of the things
we didn't get the opportunity to talk about was your documentary, and darn it, I wanted to hear about that. So will you come back another time so that we can talk
anytime.
More? Very
anytime
good.
You guys have been great.
Okay,
thank you,
cool.
Steven,
thank
so
you so
you.
Much. Good night.
Hey, you guys take care. Okay.
Yeah, good night.
You too. Bye-bye.
Cheryl, what's next week?
Yes, hi. By the way, that was great. Thanks to Stephen for coming on and talking about his work and theories and
probe.
Awesome. And the probe. That kind of wrapped it up really nicely. Great show.
I don't have my glasses on. I'm sitting way
special
back
probe.
The computer's
yeah. So next week we have, and Karen, you mentioned it at the beginning of the show, and this by next week, those listening live, that's July 21st. Those listening on podcast, you'll probably hear it on podcast by the time you're listening. It is Jason Haxton and Kevin Manis, and they are two owners. Jason is a current owner, and Kevin is a former owner of the infamous Dybbuk Box. And
wait a minute. So when I asked you about that, why didn't you say to me, they're going to be on next week?
Oh, I think that was at the time I was half listening, and I thought you knew that.
I did not know that. That's
you
awesome.
You did know that? Oh, my gosh, how funny.
I am going to watch my P's and Q's, man, because I'm afraid of that thing.
Yeah,
the Dybbuk
so
Box,
be careful.
For those of you who are listening that don't know the story of the Dybbuk Box, it's at dibbukbox.com. It's a fascinating story. It's this object, this wine box, a wine cabinet that has wreaked a lot of havoc in the lives of the people who own it. So
a lot.
There's Kevin has a book coming, or not Kevin, I'm sorry, Jason has a book coming out. Kevin has just recently written the script for the movie that'll be out in February. It's a show you won't want to miss, especially because we can see what mishaps happen to us, because whenever the Dybbuk box is on, something happens.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, so make sure to listen next week. That's July 21st.
And then listen the week after, because we could be dead, so who knows?
Oh, God, please.
From no. The could, box. Have whole new, could have whole new hosts.
Yeah. Well, the week after, since you mentioned it, July 28th, we're going to be talking again to NEPA Paranormal. They have an interesting new show on. It's a web show and local cable show called Ghost Detectives. And we recently published, I think it was the June issue, a review of the show. Very, very interesting show. So check mm-hmm. that out, too.
Very good. Yeah. Okay. Cool. So next week, 8 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Eastern. I'm sorry. Woohoo! So I did it backwards. It's 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern, and other times in the flyover states where Rick lives. And we hope you'll join us, Paranormal Underground Radio on Z Talk Radio. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. Good night.
Thanks for listening. Good night.
Good night.
If you'd like to be a guest on Paranormal Underground Radio, email editor@paranormalunderground.net. Until next week, keep exploring the unexplained at www.paranormalunderground.net and join us again next week for Paranormal Underground Radio on the Z Talk Radio Network.